Good morning, LinkedIn friends, Value First Nation. Welcome to another episode of Value First AI Daily. Here with our favorite daily AI expert, Nico. How you doing, man?
Doing well today, sir. Doing very well. It's another great day in AI land. Another victory for our side as I'm starting to see the division this morning.
Another victory. Tell me about that victory.
Well, it's been a minute now that there's been all the lawsuits back and forth way back, starting with the New York Times and OpenAI and who is responsible for whose content and who actually owns content. If you read it and if it's publicly available, do you still pay somebody for it and this, that, and the other thing? And given just the insane amount, just the volume of data that needs to be ingested for these models by way of books and learning and materials, it's extremely counterintuitive to try to put a pay gate in front of that before you even start and say, no, you got to figure out how to pay all these people first before you can actually get any of this content. And so, of course, you know, they kind of just like broke down the door and trained on the content prior to actually asking anybody first. You know, that tends to be the easiest and best way forward. So all of a sudden, lawsuits start flying around. Most recent one against Anthropic. Didn't think that it was going to be that serious, but Anthropic, you know, I get it. I don't know if they're doing it on purpose. Maybe they are. Who knows? I think that maybe the other side kind of thought that they won because maybe it's just such a big number that they were just so blown away by it that they just accepted it. But essentially, Anthropic settles for $1.5 billion in their lawsuit, in their copyright lawsuit. And the $1.5 billion settlement, you know, where most writers might be rejoicing right now. what really ends up happening is Anthropic basically won the exact same argument that we have been making pretty much this entire time, which is that, hey, just because you go into a library and read a book cover to cover, and then you come back and you write a report about it, doesn't mean that you then owe the author of the book XYZ percentage of whatever it is, right? Effort that you wrote, you got from the paper, or like if your paper goes on and wins some, you know, cause like that's the case too, right? Let's say you use some research from a library, you write a paper and you win a contest and the contest's worth 10 grand. Do you now have to divvy up some of that money to the writers that were sourced for the contest that you won, right? We don't do that. So why would you ask a language model company to pay for the content that it sourced for the output that you got, right? Now, I kind of get it because the real claims of most of these lawsuits, which is the reason why most of them are losing, is that the engines that have ingested this data are also spitting the data out verbatim. And that's where everything like breaks up. And that's where everybody starts losing because that's not what's happening, right? They're training on it just like a person would. They're learning on this data. So yeah, I thought that was a really nice piece of news to wake up to this morning was that, hey, even if you're going to get paid out, it will likely be a very minimal amount, rightly so, because unless it's like seriously high-end quality written content, you're not going to see, like, I don't know what people's expectations were, right? I don't know what the expectations were from most people. You know, if you thought that this was anything, and maybe that's what people had in mind, if you thought this was anything like royalties, it's not. It's not like you get paid because somebody uses the model. That's not how this works. You'll get a one-time payment for a very, very, very small amount for the work that you did. So even if, right, even if you thought your work was super important, at most, I don't know. I'm just spitballing because I have no idea. I haven't looked at the actual details of the lawsuits yet. I don't know. Let's just say that at most you got 50 grand out of it. And I hope that's what you valued your work at, or, you know, I hope you valued it less than that. So at least you got more than you thought you did. I don't know. I don't know how that works out, but all I know is it's going to be a one-time payment. You're definitely not getting paid the same amount again, let alone getting paid again.
Yeah, I'd imagine like most will not be close to a number like that. I mean, this is a part of our capitalist infrastructure that I can't wait to be done with. Like, so much of this is done in an effort to signal, and like, just on principles, they want to win this. When principally, this legal structure around copyrights were just not built for the AI world that we're in now, right? No. And that's where if any of these people put any of this energy into creating value, like, how much farther along like could we be? As like, if their content, that's where, if their content is actually valuable, like, because it's like, meanwhile, you've got the whole of marketers and like B2B and SaaS infrastructure talking about AEO. Like, how do you show up like in search engines?
Right.
Like, by giving them content. Like,
yep.
And now, like, that's the thing. Like, how many of these people are benefiting from having their name in the bright lights of Claude or GPT or Gemini or Grok, like being distributed in ways that they could not even imagine, in places they could not even imagine, and
influencing more people than you ever thought you might?
Yeah. Like, why did you write the book? If it was to make money, like,
you know,
you want, no matter what. But if it was to actually move people and create change and give insights, now you will be able to do it at a scale that has not been realized before right now. Right. So all this, just the whole litigious culture that we have, is going to go by the wayside, you know, within a few years. It's just, yeah, like all of this stuff that just feels, I guess we get back to the word vibe, if it just feels wrong, like, it's going to go away. Like,
yeah,
because there's no place for it.
That's the funny part, right? Is what you were saying earlier in terms of the structures that we have now in the face of AI. I'm watching this like almost on a daily basis. I'm watching this clash between like the younger tech crowd and legalities and Wall Street and corporate America. And the clash is massive, where the younger tech crowd is just like, what is with all this red tape? Yeah. What is with all this like bullshit that's in the way of progress and production? Like, why are we so like completely hammered down by red tape from IP, right? Like, IP has just become this like huge stranglehold on shit, right?
Have you heard about the Gen Z stare?
Yeah.
Like, I got caught up on that on LinkedIn, like in the trending videos. So kudos to the feed for informing me on what this is. But this is a result, like that stare. It's basically, are you kidding me?
Yep.
Right now?
Yeah.
Like, in whatever situation. And
I love it.
The thing is about not accepting, like, bullshit
logic. It's bad logic. That's what it is.
Like cultural norms of I'm supposed to be this. I'm supposed to like give you the time of day.
Yeah.
Even if you're just speaking nonsense to me right now. Right. And they're not here for it. I mean, I feel like I've never had a good poker face. Right. So
where does everybody think that revolution, I got to tell you, that I'm aware of, revolution never came from the elderly. Like just in my lifetime, I never saw the older people be the ones to make change happen ever. They were always the ones to bitch about change not happening and how much they wish it would happen. Right. And it was always up to the younger generations to actually make that change happen. And the same thing is going on now, but it's going on at an exponential rate. And that's because it's a technological change and younger generations can adapt to that faster. So it's getting even more widespread. You know, like when I read the stories and I watch the videos about college and how AI is affecting college and how AI is affecting job markets and how people are struggling basically to make this transition. And I'm reading about joblessness and how people are losing their jobs to AI. All I'm hearing and all I'm seeing at this point is, oh, evolution is happening. Oh my gosh, evolution is happening and things are changing and things are getting shaken up. And then I look at what the job seekers are looking for, and the job seekers are looking for people who are basically hungry for what they want to do and are passionate about what they want to do. And then I don't hear like a whole lot else, right? So it's like the job qualifications have changed to not necessarily be about pedigree, but to much more be about like, hey, do you actually want to do this job? Right. And at a deeper level than that, your typical, like, yeah, you know, I think a lot of people are just like, well, I need to get a job so I can pay my bills. And that's like, that's where the, you know, that's, I got to tell you, value works both ways. Yeah. It's not just downstream, it's also up. Right. If you have nothing to offer of value to your employer or your prospective employer, They're not gonna give you a valuable position either, right? Like, they're not gonna give you a position at all. Like, that's kind of the way that it works now. It's like, you can't just like throw your hat, you know, everybody's, oh, well, I put out like 30, 40, 500 job apps. Cool. Were they in like actual areas that you really cared about? Or did you just like scatter them out there and hope for the best? Right? Because if it was the latter, it's not surprising to me,
right?
Because now you have a lot of AI systems that are doing exactly what we're talking about, and they're sifting through people's resumes. They're sifting through people's applications. They're sifting through all that stuff, and they can get the inference. They can get the sentiment. You know, there's enough of an analysis. There are plenty of applications, piles and piles and piles of them in terms of training data for people filling out apps and, you know, whether or not people got jobs from those applications and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's for miles and miles. To me, it's like going from whether or not you're the work that you've done, right? Whether or not you're valuing the work that you've done properly, whether or not you're valuing the work that you're doing, and whether or not like that is the price on that is properly set, to whether or not what you do is of any value, and then whether or not what you offer is of any value, right? So like the whole, in my opinion, that should show you guys, like, the landscape has almost entirely changed. And I can guarantee you,
what's available to all of us as individuals working inside of the United States, right? That's the disconnect, because the employers have not changed. very much. And they very much, like, the fact that this Gen Z stare is even a thing.
What are you doing? Like,
it's like, oh, it, and this is what it takes, right? Basically, it's, oh, this whole group of people does not want to play by the old rules, right? And how many times do we have to see it? Great resignation, quiet quitting, Gen Z stare. Like,
you come up with a new term like every week.
Right. And it's going to continue because, like, it was funny. One of the videos was about why millennials haven't done this yet. And it's like, because we were sold the lie first, and we did all the things and were promised, and like it was looking okay for a while.
Actually,
and now, right?
I'll give it to millennials. Like, they did start it. It was just very subtle, right? You know, I'm part of the lost generation, thankfully. And so it's been entertaining to watch everyone complain from both ends of the spectrum, with us sitting in the middle, like, well, I mean, it's not that big a deal. Like, right. You know, so in terms of like, what's the lost generation is, there were still rotary phones when I was born, and I used payphones a lot. Right. I still know what an answering tape player is, not an answering machine. And I also know what a record, not just a record player, but like an actual recording player is. A hi-fi system. So,
and we're gonna be unique in the fact that we will be basically the only generation that has intelligently, let's say, like at an adult level, like had to live life with analog and now digital and now, you know, AI.
Yeah.
Right. Like three, like just massively different, intelligence levels to where it goes from like 1 to 1 and then like 1 to 100 and then like 1 to infinite as far as like capabilities and the scale, the true scale that is behind all of the systems, where just the infrastructure change is just massive. And yeah, it's,
I mean, look, the long and short of it is, right, we were just about to say millennials kind of chipped away at it. Then the next generation, like, and millennials chipped away at it in the sense of that's where like the great resignation came from, right? Like, that was that generation of like, hey, we're kind of done. Like, we're just kind of done with this game. It sucks real bad. And I don't blame, like, initially, I will say that initially, probably for about a year and a half, I was on the bandwagon of like, wow, really? Like, it's not that hard, guys. Come on. It's work. Like, just go to work. What's the big deal? And then, yeah, it did actually come around, and I was just like, yeah, you know what? But it is, they do have a point. Like, they could make it a little bit easier. Wouldn't be too bad if, you know, if we got like a day at home, maybe. So thankfully COVID did happen, right? It's kind of weird that it took a pandemic for the country as a whole to sort of turn around and be like, hey, turns out we can do a lot of stuff at home and we don't actually have to go to the building to go do it. So why are we going to the building again? Like, how, I'd rather, you know, be a lot happier as an employee if I could just do my same job. Like, I really don't. Like, right? I don't understand the employers who just don't hear the words that are about to come out of my mouth. Boy, would I love to do my job if I could just do it from home. I don't get it. Like, that percentage is beyond the great majority of your employees. And if you look at percentages the same way that I do, then the percentage of, like, here's the thing. And this, to me, is for all of you capitalist companies, this could be nothing but the best thing to happen for you, honestly. And I don't understand why you would be pissed off like otherwise. Let the landlords figure out what to do, right? Drop your leases. Who cares? You know it's going to cost you less to get out of the lease than it will to continue and hold on to it, right? And what do you care? What do you owe the landlord anyway? Nothing. So get out of it. Who cares, right? Unless you're JP Morgan and you bought the building. That's your problem, man. Oh, wells. You know, stuff happens. Otherwise, if your employees are doing the exact same amount of work, if not more work from home, you win. Less overhead. You don't have to keep the lights on as much. You don't have to pay for pizza parties. You don't have to whatever the hell it was, right? And they like their job more and they're working harder. Okay? Now, in the tiny, tiny percentage, and I know it is because I've looked at it every single time they try to blow up a story about it, in the tiny percentage of remote workers that, quote, slack off when they're at home, fire them. God, it must be so easy. It has to be really easy to go to your IT department and ask them whose terminals aren't flickering as much as other people's terminals and are the non-flickering ones causing the drag. It's so easy to put two and two together there. Why are you complaining about, oh, people work from home, they don't really work as hard? Okay, well, and there are people who work in the building that don't work that hard. Like, what? Because fake it till you make it doesn't exist or something like that? Like, I've seen it at exact levels, so don't tell me that, like, work from home on a COG level is, like, seriously fucking something up. Like, I'm buying it.
Right. Well, no, that's the management layer. Like, the management ability that's never been trained, and now we see another one. Mm-hmm. Like, that is when COVID happened. Like, even if all your jobs could be done at home, managing people remotely is entirely different from managing them in person, to where, and I think we see this with digital adoption too, and like talking about physical process versus process inside of a system, you can overcome so much through just conversation, and like all five senses are available to you in an office. And like, you just don't have that luxury. And so a bunch of companies did try to like big brother to a certain degree, but since they didn't know how to manage that against like actual, like since a lot of people don't get the managing training that they're supposed to get, now they're just looking at numbers and instead of impact, right? It's so similar to how we think metrics are a solve for everything when like, especially after inbound, we're seeing so much of, you know, the usual thing happen after inbound and outreach and like, oh, they replied to an email and now they took the next step. That's because we spoke to them for like an hour at the boot. And that whole, like, and this is what AI, this last layer, you can use it as the conversational layer that's been missing in all digital situations, right? So literally it's going to root out like all of the dysfunction, even to the point where like, just imagine this, we're tracking videos, and as soon as it can start seeing video, it will see Gen Z stares. Yep. It will see, you know, poker faces. It will see people being disingenuous. It will see people being really excited and really interested and really motivated to do work, and then serve it up to you in a way that's manageable. So everybody gets to be put in a position, you know, for success. That's what, at the end of the day, like the game that we don't want to play is that I have to work harder because the company doesn't have their shit together. Right? Like in AI tools, like when I have GPT at home and you're making me use Microsoft Copilot at work, like there is no space for forgiveness there.
No.
Because everybody has access to the same set of tools. And the only reason we don't implement them is because we don't get out of our own ways as organizations. Like, it's 100% inability to manage change and digitally transform effectively. Mm-hmm. And employees don't want to and shouldn't have to take responsibility for that. The ones that are super interested in providing a good experience for the customers and the people around them, they bring in all their own tools to get their job done and work through it. But a lot of people are done with that. Like, yeah. Especially now that this whole entrepreneurial path is available thanks to AI. Like, as technology moves forward, we are less and less obligated to that social contract like of old, right? Mm. And it will take more things like COVID, unfortunately. Like, the next one will relate to like some AI thing that happens for people to wake up and like change and like say, okay, I've got to deal with this. I need to prioritize this, number one. How do we incentivize teams to use AI effectively? Like, even if it means they just do work for 5 minutes and then get 55 right. minutes of rest.
Right.
Right. Like, and that doesn't compute for most people. And we're at 31 minutes. We're at time.
We're on the mark.
We'll see you all tomorrow. Thanks.
See you guys.